Okay, it is 4 o'clock on Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. And I would like to call the IGU board meeting to order. Heather, could you please call the roll?
Chair Higginson?
Here.
Vice Chair Miller?
Here.
Director Bell? I think you're on mute, Director Bell.
Okay, I'm here. Sorry.
Director Nordale?
Here.
Director Troop? I don't believe she's on yet. Director Hopkins?
Here.
Director Wilkins?
Afternoon. I'm present.
You have a quorum?
Okay, thank you, Heather. I have a motion to approve the agenda and the consent agenda.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Luke Hopkins.
Thank you. Any discussion or anything you want to remove off the consent agenda? Hearing nothing, we will, and without objection, the agenda and the consent agenda are approved, which takes us down to public comment. Is there anyone wishing to provide public comment?
Yes, I would. This is Patrice Lee.
Okay.
Hillcrest Drive.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am hoping today to hear an update on the LNG supply from Top Speed and a timeline for when we might be obtaining that LNG. I did look over the procurement policy, and as always, regardless of whether I was the general manager or Joe Schmo or anyone else, not thinking about any particular general manager, I just think that it's important to have an audit of the authority or a list of the authority given to the general manager versus that held by the board. I've had recent policy management through policy training, and policies are great, and they provide guidance and side rails for a business, but they don't release a board from ultimate responsibility. So I'm just advising caution there. So then again, with the procurement policy, as reading through it, I felt like it was missing a timeline for reporting or advising discrepancies, disputes, or other challenges to procurement to the board. In other words, it's really a good idea to know that those things are happening in real time and not after the fact. I wondered where the definition is for fair and competitive. I'm sure you have it defined somewhere, but it might be a good idea to establish which definition you're using of fair and competitive as far as procurement is concerned. And lastly, I had a part in convincing a person to sign up for gas. And the person, I checked in with them the other day and said, oh, how's it going? And they said, oh, I've got my application in. I paid my $250. And, you know, I'm going through the details of getting hooked up. And so I hadn't heard about that. I didn't say anything. But is there a $250 fee that people pay? And if so, do they get it back after they hooked up? I just want to make sure when I'm encouraging people to sign up that I'm saying the right thing. When with that, I wish you a good and productive meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lee. Does anyone else want to provide public comment? Hearing none, we will close public comment and move on to new business. And the first item on the agenda is Resolution 2021-10, a resolution approving the fiscal year 2022 budget and requiring variance reporting. Mr. Britton, do you want to provide some, we discussed this at the last meeting, do you want to talk about the changes that we have since last meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've also got Wes with us on the line. We can answer any questions that may arise. We presented the draft budget to the board in our last meeting, and there was a number of things that were discussed. During the time between our last meeting and now, we have updated the budget on a number of fronts. We made a couple of changes to specific line items Specifically, we increased the customer service budget slightly by $5,000 for additional meals and entertainment. We increased our insurance expense by $50,000. This was as a result of receiving the updated policies for director and officer's insurance. If you recall, when we approved our insurance, we had an extension to our existing director's and officer's policy that was coming for expiration and needed to find a new policy. The policy costs were back in line with what we had seen the year prior and not at the lower rates of the company that was getting out of the business that necessitated us making the change. So we made that budget adjustment. We moved the purchase of 2525 Phillips Field Road to fiscal year 21 as it did close today. I signed all the closing documents for that purchase today and we'll take possession of that property tomorrow. So we made that adjustment. We left the renovation costs in fiscal year 2022 because that's when they'll occur. We did a minor adjustment required for a re-amortization of the loan. The original loan amount included in the budget was $2,080,000. The actual loan amount was $2,094,000. So there was just some minor changes as a result of that. We moved some, reconfigured some funds as far as what debt proceeds would be used for what projects, using some sets proceeds for some of the distribution versus the bonding. We increased one capital line item for the Titan IEP project. We had a placeholder in the budget at time of draft and have received a proposal since then for the cost of the mercury guard that we had in the placeholder. So it went from $80,000 to $375,000. Wes added some line numbers to the financial reports for ease of identification for discussion. And in the recommendations, we withdrew management's request for independent discretion on moving budget amounts around. We did have a robust discussion at the Finance Committee about that item, and as a result of that discussion, the Finance Committee recommended we just make clear how variances would be reported to the board versus requesting specific approvals to move budgetary line items. So the resolution was drafted with input from the Finance Committee on that particular topic. With that, Mr. Chair, we're happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Hey, are there any questions on the budget in general?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Director Nordell.
Thank you. In line with Director or former Director Lee's comments on the $250 fee, sign-up fee, could you explain where in the budget such fees show up, and is there a compensating or balancing disbursement of those fees by way of a credit or some other benefit to a new customer?
Yeah, certainly. So the fees would show up unless you can correct me if I'm wrong, but would show up in service charge revenues or other revenues. Wes, is that accurate?
Correct. That would be under other revenues, specific locations on page 36 of 60, line 20.
Okay.
Okay. And the fee that's charged to customers is not reimbursed in any way. That's the fee that they pay for to receive natural gas service. It covers the cost of up to 100 feet of service line, as well as the excess flow valve and our processing of the application. The utility does subsidize the installation of the service line substantially. Service line costs generally $2,500 on average. So the customer only pays a very small portion of that. We do require customers to agree to convert within 6 months of receiving service, or if they do not, they will be responsible for payment of the actual cost of the service, not just the $250.
Well, Mr. Chairman, may I ask another question?
Go ahead, Director O'Neill.
Thank you. I'm a little concerned that, from what I understand, the new customer or potential new customer was explaining to Ms. Lee that he didn't understand why he was being charged $250, and apparently he did not get a sheet that gave him a list of all of the charges that were attributable to his hooking up to the gas lines. And I'm wondering, are we withholding any information from customers? It seems to me that the last thing in the world we want to do is to withhold information from us. So can you explain a little bit of that? And if the $250 just shows up as miscellaneous revenue, how can we justify that? I mean, it obviously bears no relationship to the actual cost. It it seems high as a fee to be paid for a bunch of paperwork you have to fill out. Now, I just don't quite understand the whole thing. So, can you explain a little more?
Sure, I'd be happy to do so. So, firstly, to answer, I think the first question is with regard to a customer perhaps not understanding the fee, not having spoke with that particular customer. I'm not sure what the issues may have been, but we do clearly tell customers what the fee is for at the time of their service application. We do also provide documents to customers by way of a welcome packet that describes what the utility will do for that fee. The fee is for not just the paperwork, it's for the installation of the service line itself from the main line to the home. So it includes up to, as I stated, 100 feet of service line to the home. It includes the excess flow valve, all of our materials and pipes, meter, etc. And the utility subsidizes that cost actually substantially more than the $250. The actual cost of the service line is, on a residential basis, averages closer to $2,500. So the cost for service is quite low compared to the customer, compared to the cost of providing service. As it relates to in the budgeting, it's just shown as other revenue, but that doesn't, our costs associated with each one of those service lines is included in an asset once they're put into service. I think that hopefully answered your questions.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Director Wilkins.
I think it deserves noting too, I certainly have told people when they've talked to me about it, the excess flow valve is a federal mandate, if I'm not mistaken, and that is a great portion of that $250, Dan, if I'm not mistaken. So I tell people they're going to get subsidized for the first 100 feet, but a great portion of that, and Dan will fill in the blanks here, a great portion of that is the excess flow valve, and then you go on to explain what that is. That explains the cost, and it also explains the safety aspect. So I would make sure that we talk about that whenever we talk about that 250. Thank you.
And yes, thank you very much, Director Wickham. We do explain that to customers. It is approximately $175 of the service line cost to a customer. It is federally mandated that they be installed, and it's there to protect a customer service line in the event of damage. The excess flow valve will shut off and restrict the flow of gas, limiting the potential for a large leak of gas to a home or business. And we do cover that when we're describing it to customers. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, another comment, if I might, please.
Go ahead, Director Wilkin.
So, Dan, across our 8 service horizontals that we have, just for the record, this budget reflects an increase, this budget reflects a status quo cost per MCF for the next fiscal year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. The budget does not request any rate changes associated with it. So it's a status quo for rate structure.
Thank you.
Okay, and I just looked up online on the IG website and talks about the application, and there's a section that talks about the fees, so it's supposed to write on the application. It says $225, so I'm not sure if it's $250 or $225, but anyhow, it says $225 on the online application on my phone, so.
Thanks for the correction, Mr. Chairman. It is $225.
Okay. Any further questions on the budget?
Yeah. Director Hopkins has questions on this discussion about an application fee. It was quoted as $250, $225, so maybe that's just a simple error. But have those fees changed last year or two?
No, the fees have not changed. We used to separate out the excess flow valve, so we had a $50 service application fee and a $175 excess flow valve fee. But to simplify it and make it clear to customers, it's a single fee, $225 now, that's all inclusive of the application and the excess flow valve. So the fee has not changed. We've just combined the two into one. New service application fee.
Thank you. And it appears that maybe Mary Nordale is getting some information continually here as a board member while the meeting's going on from peers. So I don't know what else is being discussed, but I think that I hope that those that apply for applications are well aware that they can call the business office, and they have probably would be contacted by our recent hire that's doing an excellent job as far as spreading the word out about IGU and application process and all of that. So thanks for that. I do have more questions about the budget. In the first few pages of the budget document, we're starting out with almost $500,000 more cash, beginning cash on the budget. Where does that come from in the change from the budget we received at our last board meeting and now? Maybe Wes can answer that.
Yeah, I'll defer specifically to Wes on that. Wes, can you cover that?
Sure. The increase in cash is that the in the balance sheet was based on March 31st results, and I had updated the balance sheet to April 30th, and we also had higher sales, again in April, which also increases our cash. So a lot of it's coming right from there, and then also some things that are not being purchased. It may have either come in under budget during the time, so that's what you're seeing as a net result. Okay, just basically updating it.
Okay, thank you for that. And the using the SETS loan before the bond money, I guess that's what it looks like has been in the unrestricted capital funds. That's going to be that was done for what reason? Or am I making the wrong assumption on that, I guess?
No, We were using some of the SETS funds that were available so that we could utilize, have those funds fully allocated. We feel comfortable that all of the bond proceeds will be expended in the three-year time frame that we have available for those funds. So it's really just a discretionary of where particular funds are pulled from.
I'll look for that. Is there a different cost in that in those funds?
There are differences in cost in those funds, but not anything that is affected by how we draw them. The SETS funds have their 15-year deferral from the date that the finance agreement was executed, which was in June of 2018. The bond costs, the interest and principal become due regardless of when we actually expend the bond funds. We've received the money, so it's our costs are not impacted by when they're expended on a particular project.
Any further questions, Dr. Hopkins?
Yeah, I guess one more. Could you just refresh me? And I know it's been in our resolutions or in our financial matters when we deal with it, but did the board, I believe, approve funding from a source for the purchase of the building, and having it done in this fiscal year, it's allocated from the money that we have there. I didn't have a chance to go back and look to see where those funds are actually coming out of. So if that's a problem, you can remove me as finance chair, but whatever. Maybe that could get clarified for me.
So the largest portion of the funds are from the loan that we received from Mount McKinley Bank was $2,098,000. The remainder of the purchase price, the difference between $2,098,000 and the $2.3 million, was funded from IGU cash, operating cash, not from any other of the sources of debt. And that the renovations will be funded from operating cash, not from any of the other sources of debt.
Thank you, Dan. That's all the questions I have right now.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Britton or Wes on the budget?
I have a question, Mr. Burke.
Go ahead, Director Bell.
When you started this off, there was a $50,000 bump to the insurance, and I must have heard wrong because it sounded like that $50,000 was attributable to the director insurances.
That's the primary contributor, was the directors and officers insurance increase in premiums.
That's just the increase on the directors and officers?
So in last year's insurance, there was a new provider of directors and officers insurance, and we were able to get that insurance for, it was about $9,000 for the annual premium. Again, Wes, correct me if I'm mistaken with the numbers I'm remembering, but it was approximately $9,000. The year prior, our insurance for directors and officers was in the $40,000 range. We carry $5 million of directors and officers insurance. There's been a large increase in director and officers activity for insurance covers. The lower cost provider is no longer providing directors and officers insurance, likely because their premiums were too low and they had too many claims. So our new opportunity for insurance was in excess of $40,000 for the fiscal year. We did also provide a slight allowance, additional allowance for any increases for our insurance goes March to March, so we have to anticipate what increases we might see again mid-fiscal year and next March. So that's the two drivers of the insurance increase.
Okay. And then I had one other other question, and does the budget at all, well, I guess the LOF, the loop, is there any money being put at that until we find that resolution?
We have not adjusted the efficiency rates or the historical assumptions we've made for lost and unaccounted for in the fiscal year 22 budget. We're anticipating being able to resolve that issue hopefully prior to moving into the 2022 fiscal year. So we have not budgeted any additional costs.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Yeah, question? Chair Hopkins?
Go ahead, Dr. Hopkins.
Director, sorry. So, looking at page 2 and 3 of the budget, it appears that there's more ending cash in this particular budget proposal that we see, both in the unrestricted and restricted. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yes, that's a fair statement to make. There's more ending cash as compared to our original draft.
And yeah, that's what I meant. Thank you.
And the primary drivers behind that are as explained by Wes.
Thank you for that. That's a very good thing to see in this second version.
So, to follow up on that question, is there a driver behind that? Is it because we use more LNG from the tank, or didn't fill the tank, or is there some reason?
Just
new customers.
So when we did the first draft of the budget, Wes had updated the balance sheet, as he indicated, as of the end of March. This updated draft, because we didn't have April yet completed, the updated draft includes updating the balance sheet as the end of April, because we closed out April. We had increased sales in April, so increased contribution of cash. We also had, at that point, a number of shifting of projects, so capital projects that were budgeted but maybe came under budget or actually didn't get completed, so we didn't spend the cash. So that's the primary drivers. It's the differences in the balance sheet. The other item that we, did we change the LNG purchases before in the first draft, Wes, or this updated draft?
It was changed in this updated draft. We pushed it all into fiscal year 22 for the purchase from third party.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't mention is we have been budgeting the purchase of third party LNG, and previous draft had some of that in fiscal year 21. It's now, we now know that we won't be receiving any in fiscal year 21, so we made the adjustment to move it all to fiscal year 22. So it's timing of some things and then updating of others that drive the differences.
Thank you. Okay, any further questions on the budget?
I think I have a question, and I'm not sure that if it has already been answered. Is there going to be a call on the cash that has accumulated to date, or is it going to be folded into operating costs for payment of operating costs, or is it possible that there will be recurring cash flow into the corporation because of whatever? I'm really kind of confused about this cash business. Can you give me another neat and tidy response?
Can you repeat the first part of your question for me? I didn't hear the first part, sorry.
No. I'm wondering if the cash that you're showing on the books now is all the cash that will be received in this fiscal year and for next fiscal year as well, or will there be additional cash flows, and or will there be calls on that cash for the payment of whatever expenses are necessary, or is there any other adjustment? And I'm thinking particularly if the liquefied natural gas that you're getting out of Canada is replacing what we were getting out of Cook Inlet at a much higher price. Is that creating this cash involvement? Is there any explanation of how this is working so we can really understand it? Does that help?
Okay. Yes. So the budget is budgeting for all inflows and outflows of cash that we've discussed, including purchases of third-party LNG versus purchases of Cook Inlet gas. The budget is based on everything we're predicting to happen and what we are budgeting to expend and receive. There will be likely variances based on any variances to those budgeted predictions. And so the cash flows are shown in the budget presented as to under which, you know, whether it's restricted or unrestricted cash. There is a statement of cash flows in the budget that shows the cash expected to be received from customers, paid to suppliers, employees, and expended on capital, received from financing activities, and expended on inventory. That's all on page 38 of your packet. So that describes the inflows and the outflows of the cash flows. And it is meant to represent the budget, which includes actuals up till April for fiscal year 21 and projections beyond that through June of 2022.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to move resolution 2021-10.
Mr. Chair, I would move resolution 2021-10, a resolution approving the fiscal year 2022 budget and requiring the variance reporting.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any debate? And again, just the modification of reporting on variance will go to the next topic on the agenda, but that basically says when there's a variance, he'll report it, and he's been doing that every month in the monthly financials. So, is there any debate at all? Are we ready for the question? Okay, Heather, could you please call the roll?
Who was the second? I just didn't catch that.
I believe it was.
That's who I thought. Thank you. Right. Director Bell?
Aye.
Director Nordale?
Yes.
Director Troop? She's not, sorry. Director Hopkins?
Yes.
Director Wilkin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Miller?
Yes.
Chair Hagenson?
Yes. Okay, motion passes unanimously, which now takes us to the next item of business, and our new business is the IGU procurement policy revision. And I believe this is going to go to Renee. And there's a history thing. I remember the finance committee took this up, discussed it, and made this recommendation. I believe Renee made the modification to policy and is recommending it. So, Renee?
Correct. Yes, I understand you had an appeal, so it sort of triggered some of this, and specifically the deletion of the board hearing the formal written appeals of protests, and sort of the decision that we needed to make our procurement policy perhaps a little bit shorter and more user-friendly, but still making sure that we had a fair and competitive process that was set out in the policy manual. So all this is really doing is trying to set the board setting the general policy guidelines for our procurement policy, and then from there we will revise the actual manual to make it a little more understandable and, you know, comply with these sort of general policies. So there's not definitions or things like that in here. It's just simply trying to set overall policy guidelines and instructions how our procurement manual will be edited and revised, and that, you know, in a way that's consistent with these general guidelines and policies that are set out here.
Any discussion? Actually, I guess we're not, I don't have a motion yet. Any questions for Renee?
Mr. Chairman?
Director Nordio, go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question, and that is, when I was reading the policy, I was quite puzzled by the fact that it appears to be simply a transfer of board responsibility and power from the board to the general manager, with no sideboards on that transfer, so that there is no check or balance in terms of how much, when, what's happening to it. There's just nothing that requires the general manager to report back to the board about anything with respect to the procurement. And there's no right retained by the board to question any aspect of the procurement, and there's no discussion allowed for procurement prior to completion of the purchase. Excuse me, I'll have to get a drink of water, but I would like to have an explanation from the attorney as to why it is that we are making these wholesale transfers of power to the general manager so that the board retains almost no power of direction of the company. Thank you.
I don't think the intent, or it's drafted, is to transfer wholesale any power of the board to the general manager. Now, it does, by the deletion of D, take the duty of considering protest decisions or appeals from the board. So it sort of eliminates the board's role in that. My understanding was that the board did not play a role in the most recent appeal, so this was trying to be consistent with that, and frankly, to protect the board from having to weigh in on these type of, I would normally in my experience be somewhat complicated, complex procurement matters, but it doesn't transfer that power to the general manager. Instead, what it says is that the manual, consistent with the guidelines set out here and the general policies, then the manual needs to address and provide for a fair, prompt, and efficient resolution of disputes and appeals. And I believe that how the earlier appeal was or protest was handled was by engaging a hearing officer that works with the state on these sort of matters, so already has a basis of knowledge about procurement and how to promptly and correctly resolve these sort of disputes in a, you know, hopefully efficient and correct manner. So certainly not intended in any way to transfer that authority to the general manager, but to provide for it in a consistent way in the procurement manual, consistent with these general principles.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Director Nordell.
I think that we need to have a committee to undertake a complete review of the existing policies and then this proposal, because I do not see what the attorney, Ms. Broker, is talking about. To me, it was quite clear that there is a transfer of power, although it is not explicit. It is quite clear that the board retains no power. And I believe that regardless of the inconvenience that might encumber the proceedings, it's important that the board retain oversight of procurement. So I think it's very important that we have a total review of the existing policy with this recommendation, because we're talking about a manual that obviously needs work. And if it's going to come up before us with the quality of this proposal, we have real deep weeds to travel through. So I think that we will, our responsibility runs to the public, and we need to be responsible to the public on every matter that concerns IGU, and certainly procurement is one of them. Thank you.
Do you have a response to that, Renee?
Yes, the policy is in front of you. The existing policy is in front of you. You have a redline version of the existing policy. So under the responsibilities, A, there is still remains the board shall authorize the award of contracts. So that policy and that role by the board is preserved. The only thing is that is shown as a deletion is the existing policy with respect to number two, considering only formal written appeals, and then we're adding general policies to guide the development and the revision of the procurement manual. So you have the existing policy. The existing policy with respect to the board's existing authority is only being amended with respect to the deletion of the existing language of number two, having the board oversee and hear protests and appeals. And frankly, in all of my work with governing bodies, I have never seen a governing body engage in oversight over a procurement, a proper procurement decision. So certainly the borough assembly never engaged in that, and so I don't think anyone would suggest that the borough assembly failed in its proper role to the public. Now, there is going to be a procurement code, and certainly if you want to review the procurement code and the revisions, you could certainly do that. But our procurement code as it exists right now was largely taken, from my look at it, looks like almost wholesale taken from the borough's procurement code. So the borough's procurement code is extremely lengthy, extremely complicated, and I believe the perception was that we don't need something of that formality and perhaps of that detailed. And there was some errors contained in there that were not caught before. So this is simply trying to say, let this board express the general policies under which that we will all endeavor to review and revise the procurement manual and get the board out of overseeing and hearing appeals and let a proper hearing officer or someone with that sort of background and expertise hear those. Now, that said, that of course is up to you and to the board, but that was the recommendation.
So if I could add on to that, Renee, number two that was deleted talks about when the general manager is acting as a procurement officer. And I think we looked at that in hindsight, decided that wasn't a smart place to be. And so, there'll be somebody else other than the general manager being the procurement officer, which gives the general manager a chance to actually be the people person first before we even have to go to this next level. So I think that was one consideration. And the other thing about notification of the procurement manual, since we were gone, we've created a static calendar so that every spring, I think it's probably around May timeframe, we bring the entire procurement manual to the board for discussion so we understand what's going on.
Mr. Chairman?
Rick Nordio, go ahead.
Thank you. I think that comparing IGU and its procurement division with the staff available to the borough is an unfortunate comparison, because the only procurement officer available to IGU is Mr. Britton, and my observation of the borough is that there are a number of employees engaged in procurement, and there's a natural check and balance there, as well as advice to the borough mayor and other people who would have an interest in the procurement policy. I think it still is important that we have fair, open, and well-supervised procurement policy and practice, because it's an important function of IGU and it's an important function in the community. And there is absolutely no reason to deny the people who are the customers of IGU the assurance that what they're paying for is a well-run gas utility and not something that is not very well run. And I'm not saying that that's the situation we have now, but the potential is there, and especially the potential is there if Mr. Britton leaves the corporation and his experience as a procurement officer departs with him. So I think that Ms. Broker's justification is ill-placed. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Director Wilkin.
Will this revision to Policy 6 require a motion and a vote tonight?
Yes, it will.
And I'm ready to move if at your convenience.
When we're ready. Is that a motion you're making?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the board adopt policy number 06, dated June 6th of 2017, as amended and presented to the board
Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, I would second that.
Okay, now we're open for debate. So,
is that heard?
I have a question. Oh, that was Mike. Second.
Okay. Dr. Hopkins, go ahead.
Thank you. To the attorney, do you know offhand that the bulleted items that we could be adding to the procurement policy, does the procurement manual speak to having fair, prompt, and efficient resolution of procurement disputes, fair and competitive procurement process? Are they in there now in that language?
You know, I don't recall. I think it has some general principles that may be similar to that. Certainly most procurement policies have those as, you know, kind of general policies. But where the procurement manual really has its role is setting out those fair and competitive processes and outlining and guiding the actual process and how it should occur and the steps that is required to occur, as opposed to, you know, setting a general policy, which is what this policy is attempting to do.
Thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Britton. Mr. Britton, can you tell us how many people operate as procurement officers in ITU currently?
The total, Mr. Chairman, it depends on the total is probably 10 or 15, but many of them are limited to procurements below $500. So like an operator can go out and purchase materials and things below a level of $500. For larger procurements, they still all require my approval. The delegated authority for some of the larger things is limited to less than three individuals.
Chairman Hodgson?
Go ahead, Director Beck.
And Dan and I discussed this. I had issues with the a while back on how the procurement and the appeals went. And I think in that case, the mistake made was that Dan was acting as a sole actor in the procurement. And his discussion with me is he sees that really we need a committee that any time there's a best value sort of a decision, that it takes a committee. And I think that is what this provide for a fair and competitive procurement. That the direct that our manager is supposed to be doing is to make sure those sorts of things happen. Am I correct there, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. As a result of the appeal that we did receive and reviewing the practices that we had in this particular instance, I was the GM and the procurement officer and the sole evaluator of the procurement. And in hindsight, that was not the best way to proceed for IGU or anyone else. So we agree with the general approach that for anything that's a request for proposal has any level of subjective evaluation of qualifications, et cetera, that an evaluation committee be established for that evaluation itself. So agree with that approach, and that's how we the procurement manual allows for an evaluation committee. It doesn't demand it right now today, but are moving forward we will be using evaluation committees for all of those.
Okay, and then go ahead. I gotta think this one out.
I didn't hear catch you. That was Director Hopkins.
Yeah, thank you. After following that board debate with General Manager on that procurement appeal, I know I spoke to Zane and discussed with him some of the changes that I would have liked to have seen in the policy, or what are we going to do about it, that back and forth with Zane. And at first it started out with, gosh, the board has to be that body in there, and he reminded me that that's really not the role of the body to get down into that that level of because the expertise is dissipated at that point, or just right outright lost, or they never had it, to establish whether the decision on a procurement, the items and the cost and all of that, are relevant to the individual board members, and that he said that that should be moved down into a procurement manual that's clear on that action. And I would say at this point in speaking with Renee on it, I would say that this is laid out, I would think, for us to see at a later time when the policy manual or procurement manual is revised. I would think that we would have an availability to look at that and question it, but I believe I'm in favor of thinking that the board should not be the one that receives and considers formal written appeals of protests because of the concern of adequate expertise in evaluating those things. So, thank you.
I totally agree with that. There is no expertise on this board that qualifies us to understand the appeals and all the levels of reading the project documents and interpreting them, and there'd be so much out of context and understanding it. It doesn't belong at the board level to make that decision. However, it is incumbent on the IGU staff to keep our board informed of where we're at in this process. I know with that appeal, it was way late in the game before we ever knew about it, and consequently, you know, we missed a legislative session. So I think being informed and timely is just critical to things happening. But no, I don't want to be part of the decision on an appeal.
I would agree with that. Any other further debate? Hearing none, Heather, could you please call the roll?
Director Nordell?
Here.
What?
Oh, no.
Director Nordell?
Oh, sorry. No.
Director Hopkins?
Yes.
Director Wilkins? Vice Chair Miller?
Yes.
Director Bell?
Yes.
Chair Hagenson?
Yes. Motion passes 5-1. Which now brings us next on the agenda is our report to the marketing report. Mr. Britton.
Chair Hagenson, I have to leave. But
okay, I tried to move us along to get done by 5 o'clock, so
you did good. Okay. Thank you,
Director Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I believe Elena's with us tonight, and she can walk you through the marketing report.
Evening. Yes, I'm here. I'm just unable to turn my camera on. I'm not in Fairbanks right now, but hopefully everybody can hear me, and I'm ready to give the marketing report. If you can go to the next page, please, Heather. This is a report of how many applications we've received in 2021. As you can see, May really spiked up. I also added a few applications to the April report. If you if you're comparing the numbers from the last board meeting, I had 54 in April. The exact number as in March. Now I compile these reports a few days in advance of the board meeting, which is usually before the end of the month, so I'm able to add a few, much like I will do for the May. So in May we surpassed 100. If you could go to the next page, please. And that was where I have the applications accepted for 2021 installed. As you can see, we're constantly adding more customers to the accepted for install list. We even had somebody who had their application in 2019, and finally we've convinced them to get on board for application for installation this year. We've added 41, and we're going to continue pursuing all of those to transform them into accepted for construction. I'm ready to go to the next page, please. At the last financial meeting, financial committee meeting, I understand that there was a request that the service turn-ons be added to the to the marketing report, and here they are. We've turned on 57 customers as of the date of I compiled this report in 2021. And on the next page, I have just a few brief updates. The home show, thank you to everyone who stopped by. We had a really good home show presence, in my opinion. We've collected 27 applications, people who are already on the spot after just having a couple of questions for us. We gave away a lot more. So we're seeing part of that increase in May is directly related to that home show effort, and we're going to continue having our public presence. I sent out about more than 5,000 postcards after cleaning up the list to just make sure that everybody who receives a postcard is directly on our distribution line. That postcard was a very simple marketing message. If you remember from the last board meeting, it just said there's natural gas right on your street. Here's how to get the application if you're interested in natural gas. We've received a lot of phone calls, a lot of inquiries from that postcard, people who filled out applications saying that they've heard about it from the postcard. We still have some people who are on the natural gas lines, but they are confused about whether there's gas in the lines or not, especially in the North Pole area. So we're going to continue that targeted marketing to try to get folks on board. We are working on a contractor certification program. Part of that effort is directly related to what we hear our customers say. A lot of customers are complaining about the fact that it is very hard to get a contractor to even give them a bid or to actually do the work. Contractor availability being one of the highest reasons that are cited by customers and their inability to convert to natural gas. So we are working on contractor trainings, and this contractor certification program is an idea that we have about how to get certain requirements, and when the contractors fulfill those requirements, such as a certain number of years in business and a certain, you know, being licensed and insured and bonded, being able to offer free estimates and so on, coming to our training, then they can be added to our website, and we can work closer to them to get customers taken care of. We have 10 North Pole customers who are using natural gas currently. At the last report, there was a question about how much interest and how much activity is the Facebook gift card giveaway generating. And I pulled some numbers. The views refer to a person was just scrolling through their Facebook, and Facebook showed our post to them. And engagement is anything that's liking, sharing, clicking on the photo, clicking on a link, anything like that is counted as an engagement. So as you can see, we had over 2,000 views and about 341 engagements from the three posts that we've sent so far, and I intend to continue having those. We are making changes onto the website. If you have been monitoring our website any closely, you will notice that we have started by making some design changes. First, we are working to make sure that we're consistent as to where we put the banner. Is there a banner or not on a certain page? How we list, so basically visual consistency. We also removed some of the backgrounds that weren't very business friendly. Usually business pages should have white backgrounds, and that's what we're working towards. Next, we'll work on our homepage. We'll make it shorter, more informative, with information that is the most important for customers to have, after which we will rework some of the language. I will give a tour of the website and explain the changes that we've made at the next board meeting. And if you could go to the next page, please, Heather. I don't believe that this image here get these yard signs any justice. I think they look a lot better in person, and hopefully you'll be able to see them soon. But these are 24 inches across by 18 inches tall yard signs. They are double-sided. They're much like the political signs that you see around. They will be mounted on wire mounts, and we will have them in strategic places around the Fairbanks and North Pole area. As you can see, some of them will be in front of homes, residential properties, so that this home is fueled by natural gas. Similarly, in front of businesses, we'll have those businesses fueled by natural gas. In areas where we will make mainline extensions to help generate more interest and to make those mainline extension hopefully more feasible by being able to add new customers, we will have the yard signs that say natural gas is coming to this neighborhood. And then in North Pole, as I mentioned, by talking to customers, a lot of people haven't heard yet that we have our distribution system fully operational. So we're trying to inform people more by putting those natural gases now in North Pole yard signs and in strategic places in North Pole. I just got them printed from the printer on Friday, so we'll start putting them around town. And that concludes my report, and I'm ready to take any questions.
Any questions for Elena?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple, please.
Go ahead, Director Wilson.
Thank you, Elena. Good job, as always. Could I take you to page 53 of your presentation under contractor program? A couple of questions there. When you think it's appropriate, would you send out to me and whomever else would like it, a list of all of the contractors? I know we've had one in the past, but I'd just like to have it updated so that I can send people to approved contractors.
Sure.
Secondly, if that's okay with Dan, if we're having a shortage of contractors available to serve Fairbanks North Pole, are we getting any sort of indication that there may be Anchorage companies coming north to do business in Fairbanks installing gas service?
I have had a lot of conversations now with different contractors and contractor groups, and from what I'm hearing from the contractors is just that the customers are maybe not knocking on the right doors. From what I'm hearing from the contractors is that they have plenty of availability. There are contractors who have added specific crews because they're watching us and they're seeing that there's going to be a lot more potential for work in the natural gas area. So I think we haven't started looking at Anchorage as of yet. I believe that by getting contractors and customers together, we would have solved a big part of that problem.
Right. Thank you for that. And my last question is going to your next page, page 54, with the four signs. If my home is fueled by natural gas, is there something that the IGU gives that customer as a show of appreciation for putting that in their yard?
We haven't talked about an incentive, which doesn't mean that we can't. We at this moment, the answer will be no.
Okay, just a suggestion, maybe give certificates to one of the businesses that is uses our service, but that's for you to consider. And with that, thank you for your good work.
Any more questions?
Yes, Director Hopkins.
Go ahead, Director Hopkins.
I agree with Director Wilkin that it's great information that you provide here and the work that you are doing out in the community. Did you say that all the yard signs are printed and received by you?
That's
now?
That's correct. That's correct. We have them on the office.
Someone who loves and hates yard signs, I would think that you might want to enlarge some of the print. I know that I was asked to put a yard sign up for FAI5G.com, which is a new internet provider for 5G speeds. And
The print needs to be large enough so that when the builders drove by and said, what the heck is that in your yard? Maybe they were speeding, but you might want to make the print larger. Probably don't need as big a gas flame, or just make sure that it's clearly that it's IGU. But when you drive by, those things, you almost don't have time to have that visual image impressed just because the letters are thin. So maybe you had a consultant that has a lot of experience in yard signs do it. But anyway, just another opinion by the board member. But thank you very much for all of those, and I look forward to seeing them. But I have to drive away still to see those in yards, but I'll look for them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
No, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. I really enjoyed it very much, and I'm pleased by the success you're having. One of the things that I have never had available to me is a census of all of the customers or potential customers in the Fairbanks area within the service area of IGU, so that we know all of the potential residential customers, potential commercial customers, and potential other customers. And as a consequence, I've never known just exactly what our penetration is in terms of service. Is there any way, if it doesn't exist, is there any way of putting together that kind of information as a visual so that we could know, how we're making it in terms of where the service lines are, being used, and where the customers are, so we can get a really good handle on what needs to be done as a continuing effort and a follow-on of your efforts, just to show that there is progress being made by IGU.
Sure, yes, although I don't have it as a visual right now, I'll think about how to display that visually for the next board meeting if that's possible. But just by the data that I've gathered when sending that mailer that I just referenced out, that mailer went out to about 5,100 residents and businesses combined, both in the Fairbanks and North Pole area. So that is based on the borough address information minus the existing customers that we have already, considering the fact that we wouldn't have to extend the main line at all in order for those customers to be serviced. That's about the population, 5,100 service lines.
Well, that would be great. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Director Welkin.
A question to Dan, if I could, please. As long as we're having a marketing report, will we be in the future, as Carl Gork gets up to speed, getting a report from him on his outside sales efforts?
I had not envisioned providing a separate report on outside sales. Perhaps Elena can consider how she might incorporate some of that specific data in her report, and would prefer to keep one marketing report versus breaking them up.
And that's fine. I wasn't anticipating that he'd have to actually be here, but certainly I would think be part of our report on how we're doing on that outside effort once he gets up to speed and gives us a good sense of the market. So something for you to consider, please.
I have a couple questions here, Elena. You mentioned the website, and you're updating your website continually, and I looked on the other day and found there's a list of contractors on your website, which is pretty handy. So if you need a list of, and I don't know if that's all potential contractors or the one you've talked to, how you get on your website, but that would be a good place to go to get redirect customers, potential customers too, to get a contractor. I also want you to think about, or kind of, would you step back and explain, you've said it twice, targeted marketing. And I had a person ask me if they had gas, or if they haven't heard anything about gas in the area. And when I asked them, well, where do you live? And it was like a McGrath Road or something. And so they wouldn't get anything in the mail. So would you explain your targeted marketing approach?
Sure. The targeted marketing, as I mentioned, targeted marketing as opposed to general marketing. And I just as a general remark, if I have something on the radio and I don't know who's receiving it, that's general marketing. That targeted marketing is if I send specific mailers to specific customers who I know have natural gas. So that those would be my direct target. When I make those efforts for specific people. So if somebody doesn't have natural gas on their road, then they would not be part of my targeted marketing efforts. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I just wanted to have you explain that because there's some people who say, well, I haven't heard anything about gas lately. You know, I'm in the dark. What's going on? And they're not part of that targeted group. So I guess when you market, you might want to think about not just that, you know, you do some general stuff like in the newspaper, I guess, if you want to, or TV, but or whatever you're doing. But then the part of the most effective is the targeting. I just want to make sure you explain that and kind of illuminated that differentiated that for us for the board.
Right.
Also, from memory, I know you mentioned 5,400 people, but I think Ada did a study for the whole borough back many years ago, that actually listed every potential customer in the borough who would have gas available in all different or all the phases we had identified at the time. So there's another data source for you to take a look at.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Elena? Okay, good job. Thanks, Elena. We're going to now move to the general manager's report. Mr. Britt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned earlier, we did close on the Phillips Field Road property. The paperwork was all completed. We will receive the keys and take over the property tomorrow, assuming all of the wires, et cetera, are received appropriately by the title company. And we'll begin the process of renovation, move-in. We have to be out of our current lease space by August 31st, and that's our target for completion of the renovation and complete move facility. I had a meeting with Prowpeak here in Fairbanks, one of the field representatives in Alaska, meeting and talking about potential mobility purchases from Prowpeak through the agreement that we have previously signed that allows for spot purchases. Nothing specific committed for any spot purchases at this time, but we'll continue with the discussions with them. I know there was a mention earlier of questions about the status of top speed agreement, I think, in public comment. We have, as you know, the board authorized the general manager to execute an agreement with top speed. The pricing and such is confidential at this time. We have worked with top speed and agreed on terms and have indicated that IDU is prepared to execute an agreement. Top speed has not been willing to execute that agreement yet as they continue to refine some of their logistics. I have not received an update from them in about 2 weeks on their current status, but they were working on additional logistics. So we do not have an opportunity to purchase any LNG from that agreement yet, but I'll continue to try and push it. The Finance Committee met and approved, or as as indicated earlier in the board packet, and the recommended acceptance of the May financials. Elaine has presented the marketing report earlier for you. Additionally, I continue to report the status of oil price, and as you can see, it's continuing to creep up, getting close to the $70 per barrel range for the NS West Coast. I've added some more specific pricing here for residential heating oil average price as of our date of survey. You can see here that the residential heating oil price as of May 12th was $3.03 a gallon. The natural gas equivalent to that would be $2.80 per gallon. So we're currently about 8% below oil price based on 135,000 BTUs per gallon, which is a number one, number two blend. Moving on, next page, please. Titan continues to operate under a reduced production. We've had a number of issues around the parts being received for the booster. We think we've got all of the correct parts on order and are awaiting a receipt of those. After we did an initial repair, we did find a secondary bearing that needed also to be repaired, so that's in status right now. The previously reported electric motor that was needing to be replaced, that's completed and it's back in service. We've had zero lost time injuries or vehicle accidents in both in Point McKenzie and in Burbank. Our storage volumes are continuing to increase now on a daily basis, and the LNG inventory increased from 1.8 million gallons at the end of April to 2.2 million gallons at the end of May. The North Pole continues to operate uninterrupted, as does our other sites in Fairbanks, sites 1 and 3. We are should be winding up the North Pole storage project. The punch list items are expected to all be completed in June, and that project will be 100% closed out, and we'll provide a closeout report to the boards, to the board. We did execute two contracts for the new services and mainline installations, and we will be beginning new service installations in the middle of June here, by June 15th. As we're aware, the Titan investment decision remains paused. That, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions on the manager's report.
Any questions for Mr. Brittain? Okay, hearing none, good job, Dan. We'll move on to the IGU attorney report. Welcome back, Renee. Are you going to add to your report?
No, nothing to add. Thank you, and happy to see you all and work with you again this summer.
Good. Any questions for this broker? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. We're now to director requests for IGU information. Are there any director requests for IGU information?
Mr. Chairman, I have one.
Go ahead, Director Wilkham.
It occurred to me as we're going through the budget issue that this budget marks a fourth full year of operations. And looking back, there was a lot of discussion and gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, as there should have been, because we were really shooting in the dark as what we thought our market penetration was going to be. So, Dan, I think it would be appropriate to bring to the board the FA where we thought we would be at the beginning of year four and where we really are, and of course have it at the 35% level penetration as well as the 50. I think it's a good time to stop and just see how close we were on all of the work that many, many people did to try to estimate just how we were going to enter this market and be profitable. So I would just lay that out for you and Steve to talk about, and I think this is an excellent time for us to look back and how it may, and then again, as we look forward, our next goals as far as market penetration. So, thank you.
Okay. In response to that, Dan, or just...
Just briefly, we did start to have part of that conversation, which we started providing the comparison between the pro forma and where we are at. That's page 26 of the packet today. So we've had some of that. I think we could add to that further by checking against the financing agreement to see if there's anything specifically there that would allow for a comparison. But I believe the financing agreement, for the most part, referred to the pro forma. And I'll have to review that. But I agree it's an opportunity for us to make sure we're checking our progress against our long-term projections and where we thought we might be with the FN. Maybe look to make some revisions to the currently report we're providing.
Thank you. Any other requests?
Chair Agatson?
Go ahead, Director Hopkins.
Probably not real formal, but at the end of the current fiscal year, we may end up with, in the June, or we'll probably see it in the July Finance Committee, what the budget looked like for FY21. Will that provide a new snapshot of what FY22 budget would look like after the completion of FY21? Or do we not get that? We just continue month by month seeing it compared.
So the main changes are really to the balance sheet, which is the updates to the cash levels and things of that nature. Those are kind of hard to deal with in a budget when you've got so we can look at a comparison. You'll see that information in the final year-end reports, and we can talk about whether or not it makes sense to show a comparison to the what was given at the time of the budget versus the change. But definitely all of the information will be provided in the financial reports.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions or requests? Hearing none, we'll move on to closing comments. Mr. Britton.
Just briefly let the board know I will be out the rest of the week. I get the great pleasure of taking my daughter back to school in Providence, Rhode Island. She's going to go start her PA program, so dad gets to tag along and help her get settled in. So I'll be out until Sunday, but available by cell phone and such if needed.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great. Attorney, IGU Contorney, any closing comments?
No closing comments.
Okay. Directors, Vice Chair Miller.
No comments, Mr. Chairman.
Director Bell. Oh, he stepped out. Director Odio.
No comments tonight, thank you.
And I think Director Troop is still gone. Director Hopkins.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted to make sure that thanks to Dan and congratulations on finalizing and signing, purchasing the new facility. I think that's a big deal, and going to be very impressed with when we get to walk into it when it's a little different than it is now. So, Dan, thanks for that, and of course all the board members going along with it. But it's great to have that that purchase. And I want to say that I also want to thank you for the FY22 budget and the discussion, and especially the
the proposed increase in available cash, which is a darn good thing to have, and certainly look forward to next fiscal year and seeing all these new connections being done out in the service area. So it's all good news, and kind of following on what Director Wilkin made his comment about every year, my opinion of that would be every year is getting better and better for us as a utility and the operation. So thank you very much. That concludes my comments.
Okay, thank you. Director Wilkin.
Yeah, thank you. Two, I would associate myself with Director Hopkins' comments about the budget. Wes, nice job every year. It gets just a little bit smoother. It doesn't get any easier, but it does get more put together more smoothly. And so thank you, Dan and Wes and the whole crew for that. My next one is just a thought, and I throw it on the table today not to decide or discuss, but to maybe management and Steve can talk about it. I think we're giving the finance committee a short shrift. And here's why, and I would suggest that we change the way that we handle our meetings. So let me say, they meet once a month and spend their precious time for a couple of hours going through it. And then what comes back to us is a report appreciated with 18 pages that we don't study. And at least I don't. So, but it comes back and it goes into this consent agenda. And so if somebody does have something in the finance report, we have to pull it off and go through that rigmarole. I would suggest, Steve, that what we do is we don't include the finance committee in the finance report in the consent agenda. And it's actually a line item. And I would suggest that we turn to what in this packet is page 24 and 25. It's our bubbles. And there's a treasure trove of information in there. And what I like about it is that it's at my level. It's the dumbed down level because I do understand red, green, yellow most of the time. So that could be a matter of us just looking at it. And if something does pop out, we would say something, or Dan would say, well, if you look at page 24, you'll see line number 14 has a such and such. And we would become a little more intimate and a little more attached to the work that they are doing on the finance committee. So I suggest that we pull that out, make it an agenda item right at the beginning, and that we focus on the pie charts and the stoplights, because that's what you set out to do a couple of years ago, and it looks to me like that's moving very, very nicely now. So just for discussion for you folks in the back office, and maybe we could talk about it as board if we want to change that, the way we handle that in our meetings. With that, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilkin. To comment on that comment, I guess I can do that. We could easily take it off the consent agenda and just put it under the first report. We have a finance committee report every month, and the chairman could walk us through the highlights. That would be a fun way to solve that problem. My comments, I'm looking forward to in-person meetings. I'm not sure if we're going to wait until we get into the new office or whatever that is, but I'm looking forward to new in-person meetings, so that'd be nice. And then I also want to kind of give kudos to the whole team down there. I applied recently, and everything's been positive the whole time. I'm impressed with the team Dan has put together down there, and they're hitting on all cylinders. So good job, you guys, and keep up the good work. And with that, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. And a second.
Wilkin.
Okay, and without objection, we are adjourned. Thank you, guys.